If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you care about living more intentionally, building stronger relationships, creating real connections, and becoming the best version of yourself. But sometimes pornography can get in the way of those goals. That's why we love our longtime friends and fighters at Relay. Relay is an app designed to help you align your daily choices with the kind of life you actually want to live. Instead of going it alone, Relay connects you with a small group of peers who encourage you, challenge you, and celebrate your progress. It's about building momentum together. What we love about Relay is that it's not about shame, it's about empowerment. Relay gives you the tools and a supportive community all in the palm of your hand so you can focus on the bigger picture, creating freedom, healthier relationships, and more peace in your life. And right now, Relay is giving our listeners 40% off when you sign up. Just head to joinrelay.app/consider. Trust me, if you're looking for lasting freedom from porn, check it out. That's joinrelay.app/consider.
Today on Consider Before Consuming, we're joined by Tony Collier, speaker, author, and founder of the global women's organization, Broken Crayon Still Color. Tony opens up about being exposed to pornography at a young age, how that experience shaped her relationships and self-worth, and the steps she's taken to heal. She also shares how she's raising her kids in today's digital world and why she believes community is essential for both healing and parenting. With that, let's jump into the conversation. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining me on Consider Before Consuming today. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. I'm excited for our listeners to get to hear a little bit about you and your story and the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
So can you start by telling us about your company and the kind of work that you're doing today?
Sure. I have an organization called Broken Crayon Still Color. Okay. I feel like it's self-explanatory. You know what I'm saying? this idea that, you know, our past doesn't get to discount us, right? Like we can still create beauty from a whole bunch of brokenness. And we do so many cool things. I get to travel and speak about what it looks like to heal from all kinds of brokenness. I have a podcast called the Still Coloring Podcast. And then I write books. We create resources essentially to help people heal. So we have women's courses on healing and we have devotionals. I have my brand new book, Don't Try This Alone, all around not healing in isolation. Because are you really healing if you're isolated? You know what I'm saying? That's what I get to do. And it's cool because I say this all the time, you know, the pain that we go through, the things that drive us to numbing and addictions and all these things, it's never worth it. And it's also never wasted. And I think what's been cool is that I've gotten an opportunity to not waste all the pain that I've walked through, from porn addiction to sexual manipulation and abuse to all just drugs, alcohol, addiction, lustful, all the things. I've just gotten the opportunity to take it and to, you know, not waste it, to like tell other people like, no, I see you. I know what's happening. Me too, me too, me too. And we still can create a whole bunch of beauty. So that's what I get to do. I'm the broken crayons, girl.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that with us and for your work. Yeah. As you mentioned, so our focus on this podcast is educating on the harms of pornography, and you mentioned that you have a personal story. Can you share a little bit about your own story and when you were first exposed to porn as a child?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Houston, Texas. I always like to mention Texas because it's the best country in the country. You know what I'm saying? but I grew up in a really unconventional family, a blended family. My mom and dad had gotten together. My dad had two sons. My mom had one. Then they had me. And we, you know, we had an unconventional family, but we still had a family unit nonetheless, right? Like my brothers were like my brothers. They weren't stepbrothers or other brothers. They were really my brothers. And when I was 8 years old, my mom ended up having a massive stroke. She was paralyzed completely on the left side. She couldn't talk. She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't walk. And it created this moment of darkness in our family to where my two older brothers went to go live with their moms. My mom's son went to drugs and alcohol and gang life and all the things. My dad was a raging alcoholic, very verbally abusive. And then there was me and my mama. And I became a tiny little caregiver at 8 years old, taking care of my mom, feeding her, changing her, all these things. And when you have a parent that is an alcoholic that works all the time, like my dad was, and you have another parent who is really disabled and just unable to protect, you get exposed to things like pornography. And I remember My mom was on tons of medicine, so she was a vegetable half the time. I was just in the bed with my mama. She was knocked out, and I was just flipping through channels. And lo and behold, channel 77, which is crazy that I have so much trauma. There's so many things I don't remember, but I remember this. Channel 77 was a porn channel that I'm assuming that one of my parents had ordered or put on TV, whatever. And I just was scrolling and ended up getting exposed right next to my mother as she slept, all high on different medicines. And from that place, it's still so interesting to me that just being exposed a little bit, our tiny little brains becomes latched on and addicted because of what it does to our brain chemistry. And from 8 years old all the way into adulthood, I battled with pornography on and off and on and off. I lost my virginity at 13. I was twerking, popping, drinking, smoking all over the teen club at 15 and 16. I probably slept with over 20 guys by the time I was 21. I think it really created a lot of harm and addiction in my life at a very, very young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned some other ways that that early exposure influenced your life. How, as you grew older, how did you really see that start to affect all of the other parts of your life, having that exposure at such an early age?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously we know pornography objectifies women in so many ways. And it's not to discount or discredit that men are objectified in the industry as well. Right. But it is to say, for me personally, seeing women objectified, viewed as an object, a tool to be used and not a human to be loved, created that belief in me. Like, I was like, okay, I am only useful if I'm sexual. I am only loved if I give up parts of my body. And that was my story for a long time, up until, honestly, my last marriage, which ended in divorce 2 years ago. And my, you know, husband battled with porn. I didn't see it as a big deal at first because I was like, oh, me too. Like, I get it. But the difference was I was fighting to heal from it and he was not. And in our marriage, there was a lot of infidelity, but I think I decided that I would stay even with all the infidelity present, because again, I had this internal belief that was not true, that I was just an object, that maybe I just needed to give more sex. Maybe I just needed to be sexier. Maybe I just needed to be more available to him to be loved. And so I think it also created a lot of blind spots in the way that, I don't know, I stood up for myself and the things that I accepted as a wife that I shouldn't have. And so, yeah, all those different areas, sweet Jesus, help us, you know?
Yeah, that was so, I mean, articulately said. A lot of the things you touched on are things we hear so often from individuals who struggle with pornography. But I think it can be difficult, especially maybe for someone who hasn't struggled with it, or even for someone who has, to really put that into words so concisely. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that.
Come on, healing. We're trying to heal.
Yes. Yeah. At what point did you recognize that it was developing into an addiction?
Yeah. So I think that oftentimes addictions manifest into things that impact all of your relationships, which is a telltale way for us to realize that, okay, this isn't about me, but this also is impacting how I relate to the world. And for me, it created a lot of hiding, right? And so in my friendships, I wouldn't really let anyone go deep because I really didn't want anyone to see the real me. When you have an addiction that goes unspoken and unsurrendered, you begin to hide. Shame gets you. If I told anyone this thing about me, that I struggle with this, they'll leave the room. But it's because I really didn't give people the opportunity to get in the room, right? To know, man, I really struggle with this. I also think that the way that it's really showed up in my life is I've had to really fight to want accountability. The effects of pornography on our brain, I mean, if we're just completely honest, like, we are sexual human beings. Like, this idea that we were created to have these sexual drives and to be in healthy marriages and to actually, like, experience that non-platonic. But when you do it in a way that exposes you when you're not developed yet, or when you don't have a moral compass yet, it just starts to leak all over the place. So for me, the way that it showed up is that I had really unhealthy relationships with men. I think I was easily manipulated. I was incredibly codependent on men. And then I didn't have a lot of girlfriends. And again, I think it's because I was hiding so much. I let shame enter my story. And I only found deep connection, and it wasn't really deep connection, but I only found deep connection with men because I was looking and seeking for attention and not accountability. So I definitely think it impacted my relationships and friendships as well.
For our listeners who resonate with Tony's experience, we want to remind you that if you're struggling, you don't have to do this alone. Our longtime friends at Relay and sponsors of this episode have developed an app that matches you with a small, supportive group of peers who understand exactly what you're going through. Together, you set goals, check in daily, and encourage each other as you work toward freedom. It's like having a team always in your corner, support in your pocket, reminding you that recovery is possible. We've seen how powerful it can be when someone finally realizes they don't have to fight this battle on their own, and Relay makes that kind of connection safe, straightforward, and even anonymous. If you've been thinking of making a change, this is your chance. Start today at joinrelay.app/consider. That's joinrelay.app/consider. When you were growing up, pornography addiction was talked about even less than it is today.
Yeah.
And was it especially tough to be a girl who was struggling with this in silence?
Absolutely. I watched a documentary around the effects of pornography on the brain, and they did this study where they had all these men and women in the room. They split them in half, all the things, and they were surveying them on things that they had been exposed to. And it's interesting because the rate at which men were honest about pornography addictions was through the roof compared to women in the room who actually were lying. So they had like hooked up to like lie detector tests, and the majority of women lied in the room. And, you know, I think men get a bad rap when it comes to, you know, vulnerability and being honest about what they're battling with. But in this case, for some reason, I think because it has not been socially acceptable for women to struggle with sexual things already, right? Like, I think it's already just such a stigma that I think women just got caught up in the shame cycle. And they were like, I just literally cannot admit this. This is a man's addiction, right? Society's made us think that this is a male addiction. And I think it also is, I mean, we can go on and on about this, but I also think the reason why that's even a perspective is because it's a male dominant industry. And so women who are weak and viewed as, you know, objects, it's very difficult for you to realize, no, we have agency over our bodies. And some of us are making bad decisions, okay, like with our bodies. And so I do think it's very, 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 very difficult as a woman to talk about these things, because I think we just haven't had a lot of agency when it's come to our good bodies and protecting our good bodies. And it took me, probably 15 years to tell anyone that I was battling with pornography. And if I'm honest with you, it wasn't my bravery. I borrowed someone else's bravery. I will never forget my friend Cicely telling me, like, we were just sitting down for coffee. We had just met. We were like, we're going to share our stories. And I left this part out of my story. And then she led with it when she talked about her story. And I was like, I feel convicted. I just want you to know that you are not alone in that. I also battled with that. It's a part that I left out of my story. Shoot, I didn't realize we was going that deep. You know what I'm saying? But I'm excited because I do think that the tides are turning, the times are changing, and we're getting brave, and we're saying the thing that needs to be said. And I just think that's really good news for all of us.
Yeah. You know, we hear that a lot from women who have struggled with pornography, how isolating it feels in a culture that normalizes this for men so much not for women, when what we should be normalizing is that there are harmful effects to anyone that do not discriminate based on gender. And so I think it's so important to have voices like yours in this space sharing these experiences so that others don't feel as alone as well.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I like it. Let's set the people free, okay?
That's right. Growing up, you've shared that you also faced sexual abuse, early sexual experiences, and struggling with substances. How did those experiences intersect with your exposure to pornography?
Yeah. You know, I was talking to my counselor earlier today. I'm just really telling all my business at this point. But I told her, I said, one of the most empowering things that I think counseling has done for me is it's given me agency to name what's healthy and what's not. Mm-hmm. But when you grow up in an environment where normal and healthy look like over-sexualized promiscuity, you don't really have the agency to name otherwise. Right. And I think for years, it's just been acceptable for women to be sexualized and it's grown, right? Like, I think back to some of the movies that I even watched, and I was like, why did they let me watch that as a child?
Yeah.
Okay, like, it's just crazy. And so I think with that background, we get to a point where we really just have to start healing our own good bodies and minds to the point where we're able to name That's not healthy. That is not something that should happen. That actually is really unhealthy, and I need to get out of this. I think when we develop that agency, we are more able to look at our pasts and start naming things that are really, really hard.
Yeah, that's such an important point, because with pornography's harms, that is something that so many people don't know about. They don't know that there are harms associated with it for themselves, for relationships, for society. Yeah. And so I think it's such an important reminder of the work that needs to be done for us to normalize healthy behaviors in our culture.
That's good. That's good. Oh.
When you look back, how do you see all of those challenges shaping the way that you understood yourself and relationships during that time?
Oh my gosh. You know, I've been on this journey, I think, for 12 years of healing. So started off going to counseling every week, okay, because I needed it. Lots of trauma in my past, lots of hard things that happened. And I look back now and it's so interesting because I have a daughter who's 11 years old, and I am definitely a helicopter parent in some ways because of what I was exposed to. So I'm like super serious about technology. We don't do phones in our house. We ain't about, you know what I'm saying? Like, every single device that we have has Bark technologies on it where everything is just shut down. I'm monitor. I mean, all the things. I say all that because our healing work is not just for us, but it's for the generations that come behind us, whether we are parents or not. Our healing work, my healing work, has impacted every single aspect of my life. It's given me more perspective, more capacity, more understanding, a well-balanced, grace-filled understanding of my body and of sex and of all the different aspects. And the cool thing is, it doesn't stay with me. I am now impacting the way that my daughter sees herself, the way that she should be treated, the way that she is owed privacy for her good body. And that to me makes healing, which is not linear and very painful, all the more worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautifully said.
Yeah.
You spoke a little bit about shame a moment ago and how that was something that kept you silent for 15 years. Are there other ways you can see that shame played a role in your experience? And also, you mentioned your daughter. I'm curious to know if your own experiences with shame have affected the way that you are parenting your daughter now.
Absolutely. So now, thank goodness, okay, I don't feel like an inkling of shame in my bones. Now, I'll get embarrassed. Obviously, that's a regular feeling. And I'll also be guilty of things, right? But I think that in my healing journey, that's been the key. It's that I've differentiated shame and guilt. I can be guilty of watching something that I know is not good for my brain or my thought process or who I want to be. I can be guilty of that, but I don't have to be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I've been trying to teach my daughter. It's, we can admit that we have done something wrong, that we've done something bad, while also not claiming that we, our identities, are bad. I am good. I have a good body and I was made for good things. And the decisions that I've made, even sleeping with over 20 men by the time I was 21, even that should not cause shame into my story, because it doesn't have to and it's not true. Who I was in the past does not get to dictate what I get to have in the future. And my story, if anyone watches it, follows along, Googles my name, all my businesses on the internet, like, you will see what it looks like to name really, really hard things. And my daughter's used to that at this point, because I'm going to say the thing. To name the really, really hard things and also not let it define us. And I think that's the definition of defeating shame.
Yeah. Are there practical steps or kinds of support that made the biggest difference for you as you started to heal that you would recommend to others?
Yeah. I wrote about this in my new book. My friend Erin Eddy, such a sweet friend, been such a good friend to me for years and years and years. She was one of the first very close friends that I told about my porn addiction. And what I write in the book is that I just knew she would be like, ill. We can't be friends. Like, I just believed it with everything in me. But I felt very convicted because she had shared so many hard things about her story. And one of the hard things that she shared is that her ex-husband was addicted to porn. And so I'm like, I literally cannot tell her, because she's going to be like, nope, like trauma bond or trauma dumping, like, nope, not doing it. And I just ended up telling her one day, and I was like, I want some accountability around this. I want to get better at spacing out. This is a very interesting thing. But when I told my counselor about this addiction, I was like, I am really trying. And she gave me, and I felt a lot of embarrassment and a lot of guilt. And she gave me a perspective that I thought was so sweet. She was like, when was the last time that you watched porn? And I was like, well, I mean, it used to be like every weekend, every this, every that. And I said, I think it's actually been a couple of months. And she's like, I want to celebrate that. I want to celebrate that over time, you have done the hard work of spacing out these desires, these needs, right, these interactions. And you're going to look up a year from now and be like, it's been a whole year. It's been a whole 5 years. It's been a whole whatever. And I just don't think that would have been possible if I didn't have accountability, if I didn't get the bravery to tell my friend Erin that I had been battled with porn since I was in elementary, which is crazy to even think about. And I just want to, spoiler alert, guys, we're still friends, okay? And she has been so grace-filled and so kind and so practical when it comes to thinking about, you know, tracing the moments where I feel like I need to watch porn. What is there? What is being whispered into my ear? What gap am I trying to fill? What pain am I trying to numb? And then I'm a part of the sober community, right? So no alcohol for your girl. But that was another big thing, is that I realized that my sex drive increased when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. And so another practical step that I've taken is I don't drink because I want zero temptation. Okay. I don't want to be in any state of mind where I don't have complete control over my hormones, the way that I interface with my body. I don't want it. So those have been really cool things. So accountability, friendship, being vulnerable with good friends that can hold you accountable, and then also figuring out your triggers and touch points and maybe some stumbling blocks that you need to unstumble on, yeah, like drinking. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing all that. And shout out to your friend, Erin, for being a good, safe,
holding it down,
good, safe person to talk with.
Yeah.
As you started that healing journey, you mentioned you were spacing out the times that you were consuming. What positive things did you start to notice as you reduced that porn consumption?
Okay, this is going to sound so weird, but I really do think that I'm an attractive person. Okay. I actually believe that. And I think that there's a healthy way to embrace that, right? Like, I'm hot. Okay. I feel that way about myself. I say that now from a different place. I said that in the past because I wanted men to look at me and notice me. Look at me. I'm hot. Look at me. I'll give you sex on the first night. Look at me.
Right.
Now I'm like, no, I'm hot and this good body is mine. And the things that I do with my good body are not showing it off and all my glory's out on the streets. But instead, I'm using my good body to work out in the gym, to do pull-ups. Like, I'm so freaking strong. I can do pull-ups. Just want to put that out there, right? I'm eating up these push-ups, physical movement, fun, play. I've been doing cartwheels and stuff. It's like I've just gotten back to the innocence and the sacredness and the beauty of my body, and that it was made to do other really great things outside of just sex and so, or sexual things. So,
yeah, I love that perspective. I want to go back a little bit to your role as a mom. You mentioned earlier some of the ways that you help safeguard your daughter online. Are there other things in your own experiences that have shaped the way that you approach raising kids in the digital age?
Oh, my goodness. Again, like I said earlier, when I think back to what we were allowed to watch and listen to, I'm like, okay. Yeah. Baby boomers, whoever y'all were ahead of us, you didn't got it wrong, okay? Something went awry here. I was exposed to so many things that were deemed normal, like music videos, movies that were overrated, and didn't nobody even care that about the ratings. What in the world, right? So I think that because I'm really serious, I have been serious about my own healing journey and about the things that I watch and the things that I'm exposed to now, that has translated 100% in parenting. I give her language around her body parts and privacy and puberty and what happens. Like, my daughter knows the cycles of a woman's, you know, menstruation cycle. Like, those are things that we just did not know. Yeah. And I think with the absence of shame, the tools that we have, like a BARC Technologies or Covenant Eyes or all these different things, with the digital tools that we have, I just think we're able to make more informed decisions. And I don't want to rag on the baby boomers either. If you're listening to this, I apologize, okay? Because I also just want to give some grace and say you were doing the best you could with what you had. But now we have no excuse. We have access. We know that these things are unhealthy. And we know that we have to put plans in place to protect our children. When my daughter's friends come over, leave your little cell phone at the door. Our house is a digital free zone. We don't do TVs in rooms, even my room. And I practice that with myself in front of my daughter, in front of my kids, in front of my son. We don't do TVs in our rooms. There's a family television. We do not do closed doors and electronics. Nah, you ain't just about to be FaceTiming anybody, okay? In your room with your door closed. It's not going to happen because you know how many times your mama took some nudes and sent it to these little nasty boys? I know, okay? Like, I think, long story short, I'm on the offense, not the defense when it comes to this stuff. Right. And I think that's where we all should be.
Yeah.
Living on the offense.
Is there tension at all between having these safeguards in place that are so smart and so helpful in so many ways, especially given all the harms that we know are out there, and your daughter wanting independence, especially, I imagine, as she's growing older? And given everything you've been through and your experiences, how do you navigate that tension if there is tension?
Yeah. So I have deemed my daughter a strong-willed blessing, okay, because it makes me feel better about the situation. But baby, she is ready at any turn to challenge me, okay? I could be like, oh my gosh, look at the beautiful blue sky. And she'd be like, it's green. And I'd be like, okay. So yes, there has been tension. And, you know, I named earlier, you know, I'm a recovering helicopter parent. Like, I'm really trying my best not to project my fear onto my daughter and instead focus on preparing my daughter. So what I'm a helicopter parent, I feel like we try to avoid the exposure at all costs. We're like, no. So then we isolate our children. You can't go to that slumber party. So sorry, you can't go to this. Versus preparing them. Here is what you do if you're exposed to something like this. Being exposed to this, like, you're not supposed to see other people who are not your family, their body parts, their sexual body parts. You know what they are: penis, vagina, breast, all the things that we make very normal in our household. Preparing her to be a leader in the things that she's exposed to is a much better posture that will allow her to go out into the world and fend for herself. Because if we're just 100% honest, they're going to say things that they're not supposed to. And that makes me so sad to even say out loud, but it is true. And with that knowledge, it is now my job and opportunity as a parent, as a guardian, as a mentor, even to young girls, like, to say, like, we got a plan for that. We're not going to avoid it. And we're not going to pretend like it's not happening. We're going to talk about it. We're going to address it full on. And we're going to prepare you to be a leader when it comes to technology and being exposed to sexual things.
Yeah. You mentioned some of the boundaries that you have at home around devices and media. Do you have boundaries for outside of your home that you've navigated together?
Oh, yes. There are just certain things that we will not be around. Again, I'm a pretty assertive person. I can be a little aggressive when it comes to my children. But even down to, we're out at a restaurant and we're sitting next to a couple that's cursing. We're going to move. I'm not going to ask them to change what they're doing, but we're going to move. And I'm going to explain it to my daughter. Hey, I'd love for us to have a more peaceful dinner. And with all the cursing that's going on next to us, I want to move us to a different spot so that we can have a peaceful dinner. Same thing with movies. We have walked out of a movie before that marketed as kid friendly, and then it was not. And bye, I don't care. We take them little $17.98 from the Studio Movie Grill. I'm out, you know? And instead of being like, let's go, I can't believe this is happening, it's a conversation. Hey, I know you really wanted to see that movie. I'm so sorry that we went. I probably should have watched it first. I didn't realize it. I would much rather us not be exposed to things like that. And I want you to take ownership in what you see. And I just want you to know we're not going to stay for this movie kind of thing, you know? So yes, like, we're not just, I mean, if anybody's watching or listening to this, you probably were exposed to hard things, unlike me, outside of your house. At somebody else's house, at your best friend's house. Like, for me, I just think it's a weird situation that I was in my parents' house in their bed and my mom was just, it's a hard situation, you know, it's very different. And so we have to get good at, like, teaching the next generation that when you leave the confines of a safe digital environment, it may be unsafe. Here's what you do instead.
Yeah. You have a book that came out recently called Don't Try This Alone about power of community.
Yeah.
And when it comes to parenting today, why do you think it's so important that kids and parents don't try to face these challenges on their own?
Because we're feeling crazy out here and we don't know what we're doing. Okay. Yeah. Like my daughter comes home all the time and she's just like, well, my friend has this phone and my friend has this phone and da 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 da. And that was really challenging until I got friends that had the same beliefs as me. You are 11. You licked my elbow the other day. You are not responsible enough to have a phone and to make good decisions with technology and all the exposure. Okay? Literally. All right? You made a volcano out of toothpaste and it exploded all over our bathroom. No, you can't have access to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, but what's interesting is that as parents, as leaders, as even singles, we have to cultivate an intimate space for community that views things the way we view them. And I'm not saying like we don't have friends that don't believe the things that we believe. Like I'm all in for inclusion. I have all sorts of friends with all different beliefs. But my friend Belinda and her daughter Journey, who's the same age as my daughter Dylan, like we have conversations in community about it. And now not only do I feel less alone as a parent, because I'm like, girl, you too, girl, they showed this at school. They showed the girl, what? But now my daughter doesn't feel alone. Now she's no longer saying, well, all my friends have cell phones because her friend Journey doesn't. She got a watch, okay? She got the Tic Tac, whatever it's called, watch. We have the Bark Technologies watch. Like, I'm not saying that everything has to be cool to our kids, but none of us want to feel alone. We all want to be included. We want to belong. We want to be a part. So what would it look like for you to maybe bring some friends close that have some of the same, you know, moral beliefs as you and some of the same convictions as you so that you're less alone feeling this? And that's really what my book is about. Don't try this alone.
Yeah.
It's like, stop trying to do life alone and think that you're just perfect and you're the expert in everything or you're the strong friend. I'm a strong friend. I got everything. No, you're dying out here. Okay. And you got to stop. Okay.
Yeah. And especially with everything that you had spoken about earlier with your experience with shame,
yes.
Knowing that opening up and having that support and that community, especially with this topic, can really help to break down that shame because you don't necessarily know when you might just say something in a group setting that triggers for someone else, oh, you're a safe person to talk to about this. So
yep.
I think, you know, there's so much benefit of having community in so many ways, especially for parents today, but also
yeah.
for anyone who's navigating these topics with their children or these issues within their own lives.
Yeah.
Having support is, we hear over and over again, is always yeah. something that's so integral to mm-hmm. someone's healing journey.
It's the truth. It just is. Think about, I just want to remind us that's been listening to this the whole time. Think about that conversation I had with my friend Cicely. And she let out and said, so I've been battling with porn since I was, and I was like, whoa. And it was a bit of a culture shock there, you know what I'm saying? But think about the freedom that I felt to then say to her, hey, me too.
Right.
I no longer have to hold this by myself. I don't have to feel shame about this. I don't have to feel like I'm broken or flawed. Because there are other people who know the pain,
yeah.
Who know for real that porn really is just another idol to numb our pain, to feel something good and not bad. And when you have people that are with you and say, listen, I know this is painful and I know what you're going through is hard, but I'm not leaving the room. I'll be with you in the valleys, but I won't leave you there. We can overcome this in healthy ways. My goodness, it changes you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could go back and talk to your younger self, whether it was that elementary version of you dealing with pornography or a teenager, what would you want your younger self to know?
If your mom wasn't so sick, she would have protected you from this, or she would have told you that this isn't good. When I was a little girl, I just didn't have any healthy adults around. And so there was no one that gave me the agency to name that's not good. That's unhealthy. That girl that touched you sexually in kindergarten, that's not good. Your cousins who fondled you and sexually manipulated you, that's not good. The guy that took your virginity, the much older guy that took your virginity at your parents' house in your SpongeBob bed at 13, that's not good. It's not healthy. That's not good for your good body. I really, really wish that I could tell her that I could be the adult in her little life that said, hey, that's not safe for you. It's not good. And I just think so many of us had, no one said, first of all, we weren't saying that we were actually doing these things, right? But then no one was there to say, you're battling with porn. You're battling with promiscuity. Are you feeling lonely? Is loneliness the real source of why you're clamoring for attention and for sexual release? Like, I just wish, man, that like the little boys and girls, the teenage boys and girls that were exposed to these things had someone to tell them, that's not good and you deserve better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For any of our listeners who have experienced anything similar maybe in their lives, I'm so inspired by the compassionate approach that you shared with us and your desire to be that safe adult. Yeah. And for any of our listeners who are an adult in the life of a child, to do anything that we can to be the safe adults, to make sure that children are surrounded by safe adults who will be able to be there so that more kids don't have to experience the types of things that you had to.
Yeah, that's the goal, that we wouldn't repeat these bad behaviors. We would help to stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For listeners who may be struggling silently with pornography or abuse or addiction.
Yeah.
What's one step they can take today to move toward healing?
Phone a friend. Let's just take it right on back to whatever that game show was called. Phone a friend.
Yeah.
A real safe friend, not one of your homies that'll tell you it's okay what you're doing, but a person that'll hold you accountable. And if you don't have that, go and find it. Pursue accountability, confession, and integrity by bringing people along to give you those things when you know you can't.
Looking ahead,
what's
your hope for the next generation when it comes to navigating identity and relationships and technology?
No more shortcuts. No more shortcuts, no more numbing. If it's painful, we go through it, not around it. If it's hard, we build grit and capacity, and we stop making excuses for shortcuts. It is way past time that we start naming things as though they are. Not, well, is it really bad for you? Is porn this? Name it. Stop taking shortcuts. Stop being lazy. Heal and go and do the thing. That's what I want desperately for the next generation.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Toni, is there anything else you wanted to share that you haven't had the opportunity to share today?
I just want to reiterate what I said at the beginning. You know, I'm the broken crayons girl because I just deeply do believe that our brokenness has the capacity to create beauty. And I just want to remind someone that's listening or watching that you still have the capacity for so much beauty. What has happened to you, your addiction, the pain, it just doesn't have the final say. Beauty is on the way. We just got to work for it. That's it.
Thank you so much for your time today, Toni. It was truly a gift to be able to have this conversation with you. I certainly feel inspired. I know that our listeners will as well. So thank you again. If our listeners want to learn more about you or your work, do you want to direct them?
Come on, guys. Come on, join the party. My Instagram is Toni J. Collier, TonijCollier. And then it's everything, Toni J. Collier. TonijCollier.com. Don't Try This Alone is my new book. I'd love for you to get it. I think this topic that we're talking about is just so perfect. And the book is so helpful in building a strong community that can hold us accountable when we're in pain. So yeah, those are all the things. Come on, come join the party. We're healing over here.
Thank you so much, Toni. And we'll hopefully get to partner with you again and have
Let's
you back on Consider Before Consuming. And we look forward to seeing your journey in this work.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yay.
Yay.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and a non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. Check out the episode notes for resources mentioned in this episode. If you find this podcast helpful, consider subscribing and leaving a review. Thanks again for listening. We invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.
If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you care about living more intentionally, building stronger relationships, creating real connections, and becoming the best version of yourself. But sometimes pornography can get in the way of those goals. That's why we love our longtime friends and fighters at Relay. Relay is an app designed to help you align your daily choices with the kind of life you actually want to live. Instead of going it alone, Relay connects you with a small group of peers who encourage you, challenge you, and celebrate your progress. It's about building momentum together. What we love about Relay is that it's not about shame, it's about empowerment. Relay gives you the tools and a supportive community all in the palm of your hand so you can focus on the bigger picture, creating freedom, healthier relationships, and more peace in your life. And right now, Relay is giving our listeners 40% off when you sign up. Just head to joinrelay.app/consider. Trust me, if you're looking for lasting freedom from porn, check it out. That's joinrelay.app/consider.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.